So it's the last episode before Purim.
Oh.
I've got a Hamantoshen to enjoy on mic, since I know you guys love watching me eat and the listeners love hearing me eat.
You got a lot of good food bits lately. The food bits are ripe with you, Stan.
This is filled with raspberry.
What is a Hamantoshen?
David, I'm so glad you asked. It's a triangular pocket pastry filled with jams or fruits, and its name refers to Haman, the villain in the story of Purim, which is one of many stories from the Jewish Bible, also known as the Old Testament, of a failed attempt at exterminating the Jewish people. But now we celebrate Purim by dressing like Halloween and eating Hamantoshen, and it's really a big party. It's really nice.
When is that? Tomorrow?
I didn't get an invite.
Well, Shane, you didn't get an invite at birth, my friend.
Oh, I have to be Jewish to show up?
I guess not. No, all are welcome in my Purim.
It's a big tent religion, I thought.
It sure is. This year, Purim is from Saturday at sundown till Sunday at sundown. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Eat your Hamantoshen. The reason they're a triangle is because they're supposed to look like an ear of Haman, the villain from the story, our antagonist.
No, I thought it might be something else based on what I know from the Old Testament.
He had a triangular ear with red stuff in it.
Well, I wonder what the red stuff really
is. Seems like a problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems in the scriptures, but the cookie's tasty, mate.
Yeah.
Like, I love it's a hot take. Stuff.
Kind of pre-antibiotics, so who knows what was oozing out of the ear? Is that...
This one's going real sideways, you guys.
Hello and welcome to episode 267 of The Dive Down, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the latest decks, trends, and strategies for the casual spike. My name is Stanislav here in Chicago, and with me on the line from Denver, Colorado, it's the one and only Shane Beeps. Shane, nice shirt.
Stanislav, yeah, I got my heavy play swag on. So I don't know. It probably was because I was in Chicago eating and drinking too much. But when I tried on my heavy play shirt, I was like, oh, this is a small large. And now it's not unsnug, but I'm feeling a little bit better. I think forgetting to eat lunch because I'm busy at work is helping. You know how it is.
You work through lunch?
Oh, yeah. Most of the time. I kind of forget to eat.
There's your first mistake. It's working.
Stanislav, why are these balloons... You figured out some kind of thing on Riverside to make balloons disappear?
It's not Riverside. It's my MacBook Pro.
Yes. It's the hand-triggered video emoji on MacBook Pro. So we had one of these happen to us the other day on a conference call when I was working. So Stan is giving a thumbs up sign, and it makes like a little bubble with
no,
a thumbs up.
No, this is not acceptable.
So we were I was on a conference call at work, and for some reason, one guy on our team kept having a thumbs down hover over him in the corner of the shot. And we're like, what's wrong with Rob? Rob keeps having a thumbs down appear on him.
Like that guy in the football crowd.
Poor Rob.
Yes. Also, interjecting mid-conversation, as usual, it's the Godfather, Dave Harbarger.
But I made sure there was a clear space this time.
Thank you for that.
Trying to watch the crosstalk this episode because...
Yeah, we have to edit this ourselves.
Yeah, we're going to be editing ourselves over you for a little bit. Yeah, this one's for you to clean up. No hand signal there from Shane, you notice.
No, I'm just getting in there. Speaking of hand signals, I give thumbs up to heavy play. I'm wearing the shirt. It's comfy because Randy has got the good hats. He's got the good shirts. So Randy uses new era snapbacks. I may have mentioned this on a previous episode, but this is the kind of stuff he's like, I'm not getting the cheap hats. I'm getting new era snapbacks. Heavy play, however, does not make shirts and hats. They make play mats. They make deck boxes. They make card sleeves. They make dice boxes. And they have the enhanced ergonomics, mobility, and protection. We are loyal heavy play enthusiasts, primarily One, they're really good. They're really well made. They're really high end. I challenge you to find a better, at least mass market production made deck box. I challenge you. If you find one, tell me. But they have the EquipMag system. You magnetically attach, bundle, carry, ABC, all your stuff together. I still have my Pioneer Modern and now out of date Modern and dice box all snapped together for my little bundle from Chicago.
I recently encountered yet another benefit of the Heavy Play playmats.
Go on.
So I like to use one of my upteenth random magic playmats from history as a giant mouse pad.
Mm-hmm.
And because I moved back to America, we just got our new apartment last week, and I've been setting up my new home office, and I uncurled my previously preferred mouse pad playmat. And it was all like bacony around the edges. Like it needed mm-hmm. to be ironed. I'm not going to iron a playmat. And you know who never gets bacony around the edges? Heavy Play.
Yes.
Because it's a rigid playmat. It's rigid.
It's rigid, baby.
I do think Shane maybe got bacony around the edges, given the way he was talking about his shirt fitting earlier. But yeah, you know, we've all been there.
Well, I got more pizza-y at the convention center-y mm-hmm. around the edges, I'd say. But if you want to get this stuff, go to your LGS. It might be there. Or you can definitely get it at heavyplay.com. And if you definitely get it there, you can use our code thedivedown2024 for 10% off of your order. Or let Randy or any of the folks at the booths at the many events coming up know that you heard about them on the Dive Down. What are you doing this week?
Well, Modern's back.
Oh,
baby.
It's healed.
Modern's back, baby.
It's fully healed for now.
With a number of things. I wanted to call this episode Modern Hard with a Vengeance. What do you guys think about that? I know we got a little bit of discussion about that coming, but it just sounded good.
Is that a Purim movie?
Yeah, do you guys watch Die Hard on...
That was good. That was really good, Shane. 5 comedy points.
Yeah, I love it. All right, we're going to talk about Modern. The best thing we can do is do a little bit of a breakdown after last week's ban and see what's going on. So fortunately, we had a large-ish tournament this weekend, the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. I believe that this was the 10th anniversary of the Hunter Burton Memorial from what it looked like on their website anyway. And so we can talk about that meta, the top 8, and kind of see where it goes from there. We also got a wonderful weekend matrix from the people at MTGDecks.net that we've been using quite frequently lately. They put out a little tweet with a little bit of a sample as well that we can use to discuss what's been going on in the Modern meta in the last week. And then also, people played decks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What did you guys play?
Well, we had to test out the new Rhinos.
We had to.
We had to. And Stan, you did some more Goryeos, right?
I finished my Goryeos league. And I can't wait to tell you all about it.
I can't wait to hear all about it.
One of my best leagues.
About it.
That's where the Modern with a Vengeance came from, in case you guys don't
realize. Cool.
Oh, okay, cool. I see now.
But first, some housekeeping. Stan, why don't you take us through housekeeping?
Yeah, we got some new patrons to join the Dive Down Nation. We got Brett M, JC, Murat S, and just in time to make it onto the recording of this episode. I think... this person literally became a patron 30 minutes ago. It's Griffin.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all of you for becoming citizens of the Dive Down Nation.
I love you.
Say it quieter, but still have it pick up.
I love you.
Thought that was louder. All right.
Oh, it was both of us. It was some, you know.
That wasn't louder. It was just in stereo, dude.
If you have, is sound multiplicative? Like if you have two people, is it twice as loud?
I think it's exponential.
I'm glad we got some balloons when you held your finger up. All right. Patreon, if you want to be like all these folks who became citizens of the Dive Down Nation, go to patreon.com/thedivedown. You get some swag. You help support us. You get to come into the Discord and hang out. It's sweet. If you want to just get some stuff and not do Patreon, thedivedown.com/store. Lots of good stuff there. mana traders. If you just want to play some Magic online and use our code for 10% off your first 2 months, we have a new one that goes to the end of April. It is the Dive Down _K4L. Again, you don't have to remember that. It'll be in the show notes.
But how can one forget K4L? The Widowmaker.
Dave.
Uh-huh.
We have the Hunter Burton Memorial Open.
Oh, we're getting right into it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, what else do we have? Like the most, this is what I was looking forward to. I wanted to see what the, you know, first mid-size paper tournament of modern enthusiasts, I imagine, going down to Texas, play some paper.
Yeah, including luminaries like Aspiring Spike and many other people that are around that area. You know, and if you're not familiar with Hunter Burton Memorial, it's an annual tournament in Dallas, Fort Worth area, and it's got a great cause. So please check it out. Please Google it if you want to learn or make a donation to them. But this is the first large tournament after the bans. It was 346 players. It was 13 rounds. And we are going to walk through the meta.
We'll walk through every one of them.
13 rounds from what I could tell, let's say. MTG Melee sometimes makes it a little hard to tell. But I do believe it was a two-day tournament for what it's worth.
I hope so. 13 rounds over one day would be rough.
Inhuman, I would say.
Now, do we know any details on the prize wall? How are the ticks?
I think the ticks were flowing, as they do in Dallas, as we all know. From when we went for the Dallas-Fort Worth Arts Festival a couple of years ago, we know that the ticks do flow in Fort Worth.
Yeah, there happened to be a Magic convention at the same time. I didn't realize. The street fair was quite nice.
It was nice to have a break occasionally. All right, so we're going to go through the meta. We're going to go through a meta analysis that includes the top 13 decks that were reported by MTG Melee. We did not correct these. I am sorry. We maybe made a few corrections. But that's every deck that was above 2% of the meta, for what it's worth. So there were 13 decks that were above 2% of the meta. One note I wanted to make, and we can spot these as we go through. But one thing that's very interesting is that only three decks from this list of 13 had a win rate higher than 50%.
Yeah, I thought that was wild when I was looking at the data after the weekend. I was like, everything's bad. Everything's bad now, apparently. Everything's
super bad now. So we're going to go through these in tiers by meta share. And here's how it goes. Tier one is decks that were above 7% of the field. There's only two of them. There's only two of them. One of them is one that everybody thought would be here, and the other one is not. So everyone expected Yawgmoth to move to the top of the meta, and it looks like it did, at least for this tournament. 7.99% of the meta, 27 people brought it. It had a 49.41% win rate.
Do you think Yawgmoth is ever the type of deck that could become like a 15, 20% deck? I just don't think it is. I think this is like the top end for Yawgmoth, besides maybe like a Pro Tour.
I think it could be. I don't feel like, though, I think the specialist idea of Yawgmoth is way gone at this point. The deck's been mainstream for so long. Like, I just think if it's the best deck, I think people will pick it up, and it could do what Rhinos and Scam did recently. I don't feel like there's any natural barrier to that necessarily personally anymore.
I think where the barrier may come in is the difficulty of piloting it well. And this to me like feels like one of those decks that as it gets more popular, the win rate declines at the same rate, because we found in our own deck dive that like it's kind of a hard deck to sequence. There's a lot of moving pieces and
there's a lot of decision points for sure.
Yeah. Unlike something like Rhinos or Scam, where you kind of have like a pretty specific linear plan that if you can execute like the one thing, you move so far ahead. Yawgmoth, I think, is a little bit more demanding.
No, yes. So Yawgmoth was pretty average. It didn't have a particularly good or terrible performance. So,
and for what it's worth, you know, I have a list here from 8th place pilot, I believe 8th place in the Swiss, based on the results that I saw, for what it's worth, Andrew Debevoy. And there's nothing particularly different about this list. I don't see anything that is out of the ordinary with this Yawgmoth list. This will be a theme that will recur through this meta discussion, because honestly, a lot of the decks didn't change that much. Even in the wake of the ban, they're really just kind of going to market with the same deck, same tech that they had, even when Rhinos was dominant. So it's something to keep an eye on. But Yawgmoth, you know, 8% of the meta. It's not like something immediately leapt into being 15% of the meta, which I think is a good thing. Personally, you know, it was just below 50%. I think that's okay. It's, again, it's not like something leapt into being dominating the meta, at least at this end of it. It didn't yet. And so that's, I think that's all there is to say about Yawgmoth right now. Came in 8th place in Swiss, did not win the tournament, and that's kind of where it's at. So the other deck in this tier, in this 7% plus tier, was the kind of a surprise to me, although this is a paper tournament, so maybe I shouldn't be too surprised. But it with 7.69% of the meta, it was Mono Green Tron.
Yeah, This is wild. I mean, tell me how it did, Dave. I'm looking at the numbers, but I want you to tell me. Because I don't want to say it.
Not great.
Not great, Bob.
Not particularly great. So it went 75, 96, and 7, according to Melee, which is good for a match win rate of 41.61%. I will say, if you take and divide those numbers, they don't add up to 41.61%. So I'm not sure where this match win rate number comes from on meta. But let's just say it wasn't dominating, even if it was slightly imprecise.
I mean, this wasn't just a paper thing. I don't know if you wanted to wait on this, but like Tron was popular in all the weekend challenges as well.
Was it really?
Yes, it was very popular on Magic Online this weekend. It came in first, second, and third. I mean, in three separate challenges.
Wait, like first, second, and third in three separate challenges?
First in one, second in one, third in the one.
Oh.
It did fine, and it was also like widely played. So people are maybe just thinking Tron is something again.
Maybe the decline of Living End opens the door for Tron, just because like an instant speed go wide beatdown like Living End was a problem. Maybe.
I'm not sure Living End was a problem for Tron, though. I have to look at the win rates again. I'm just trying to imagine it, like why it would be good or not. Like, I feel like you could just play a Karn and get some graveyard aid or like an ensnaring bridge or something like that. But what do I know?
Not if they grief you and force a negation you first.
Ah, Stan, why do you have to remind me? They can't, they're not doing that as much anymore.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, Tron came in 4th place in the Swiss in the hands of Andrea Lay. And there's nothing really different about this list either. This is kind of what you would expect Tron to be at this point. Although 3 Wurmcoil Engines main, maybe that's one more than I thought would be there at this point in time. So kind of prepared for some aggressive kind of creature-y decks with that. I will also say, I don't think this is news to anybody, but there's no Karn Liberated in this 75. And I just don't think that is in this deck anymore for what it's worth. This is just 4 Karn the Great Creator, 1 Ugin the Spirit Dragon, 3 Wurmcoil Engine, and 2 Ulamog and a Sundering Titan is kind of the quote-unquote threats package. The other thing that's interesting is there's a main deck Pick Your Poison in here as for a little bit of interaction along with 3 Dismember. So, I mean, it's a cool Tron list, but I think it's very close to the Team Handshake lists from last year's Pro Tour. It's within, I think I looked at one of those when I was looking at Andrea's list, and it was, you know, it was within 3 or 4 cards of the list from Pro Tours.
What's interesting, Dave, is the MTG decks page actually had Tron as like the most played deck over all the weekend events at the HBMO, like the main event and these 2 re-CQs. I don't know. People just apparently suddenly all decided to believe in Tron lately. Apparently it didn't do particularly well across the paper events, at least, but online it's doing something. So I think that's a watch this space. I played against it in Magic Online. I haven't seen Tron in weeks, so that was novel.
What do we think about Tier 1 in general? Yawgmoth, Tron, thoughts, concerns, questions?
TBD.
Or shall we move on?
Let's move on. Don't think Tron has what it takes, honestly, but I think, you mean Yawg's going to Yawg.
Yeah. All right, Tier 2. Decks that were more than 5% of the metagame, those were 3. There were 3 of them. Zoo, Titan, and Rhinos. So Rhinos, still in the top 5 decks played here, at least at Hunter Burton this weekend, Domain Rhinos. We're going to start, actually, with Titan. Titan, because Titan's the other deck that people believed would immediately rocket to the top of the meta. It was 4th in the meta share with 5.62. Zoo was above it. We'll get back to Zoo in a minute. I mean, the thing that was interesting was not much. Someone did top 8 with it, though. The player's name was Trent Snipes. It looks like they came in 6th in the Swiss. And the deck was stock. I mean, Titan is stock, right? It's not like we're doing a bunch of teching or anything like that. But the one thing that's interesting is that there was a single Gretchen Titchwillow from the Tales of the Forgotten Realm, which shows up occasionally in these lists.
Wasn't she the lead singer in Life After Buildings?
Wow. Life After Buildings reference in the year of our Lord 2024. Very, very interesting. In case you're not familiar with Gretchen Titchwillow, costs a green and a blue for a 0/4, and it has an activated ability that says that is two generic blue, green, draw a card. You may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. So it casts Growth Spiral, basically, as a creature. Hmm. It's come up occasionally in Tron lists over the few years. Now, Titan did have a 53.9% win rate, so it was the best out of the top share of the meta by a couple of percentage points, at least according to the table that I'm looking at here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean,
but Titan gonna Titan.
Yeah, exactly. I would never be surprised of seeing Amulet Titan anywhere from like 48 to 53% in any room at any time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Of the meta?
No, of the win rates. Yes. Of the meta would be interesting. I wouldn't want to play that meta. I guess you could tech against it.
3%. So nothing too interesting there. Zoo. Let's talk about Zoo. So there were no Zoo decks in the top eight. It was actually third in meta share with 5.92%. So it was one more person brought it than brought Titan. And had a decent win rate at 51.5%. And I have a deck list here in front of me from Ian Mungle that came in 11th place. And you know what?
this deck doesn't have a lot of flex spots, I don't think.
Guess what? I mean, hey, I still hate Wild Nacatl. I know we want to play one drops. I kind of just wish I could play Inti over Wild Nacatl in this deck and just have some kind of synergy. But you're not doing it. You're just lightning bolting, tribal flamesing people, stubborn denying people, leyline binding.
This deck's good.
It's good.
This deck has a particular angle of attack and applies a pressure that not a lot of decks do anymore. Like, this is basically our burn with main deck, you know, counterspell interaction, which...
Isn't it sort of a combination of burn and, like, shadow in a weird way?
Perhaps.
It's kind of tempo. It's like get a big threat, protect it, and then it happens to have the ability to hop it and burn somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I guess calling it burn is disingenuous. It's basically like our stock aggro deck at this point, right? And it just has all the things you want in it. So it was also quite popular on Magic Online this weekend. It performed well. It's been, you know, it's been above 50% in most sort of conglomerate meta lists that I've seen recently. So I think you could do a lot worse and play Domain Zoo.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for what it's worth, I know that I was kind of lukewarm on this deck when I played it on the podcast, but this is the first one that I've looked at so far tonight and been like, yeah, I'm picking up Zoo the next time I play that. That's kind of where my head is at.
This is interesting to have like a curve out aggro strategy in the meta game right now. I feel like we haven't had something that looks like Zoo in a while that's been, you know, as successful as Zoo is, I think, at this moment. And I know that people will sometimes look fondly back to the days of humans, and sure, Zoo is not an interactive creature deck, but maybe that's one of the silver linings of this current modern meta game, is that like you can just play like ones and twos and actually get there thanks to rainbow cards.
Yeah. You had stepped away for a second, but I actually kind of feel like Zoo is slightly shadow-ish in some ways, because it has stack. It has the ability to interact on the stack and has a good removal spell in Leyline Binding, and then gets to grab a tiny bit of even more reach than Shadowy does. Like, Shadow towards the end was a lot more aggro when it was kind of like, you know, Dragon's Rage and all that kind of stuff. So kind of, it's in that space for sure. So I do think it's kind of an interactive aggro deck for what it's worth.
Wish humans was too. Like, that's exactly kind of my point, is that, like, I think, while I don't think Zoo is as interactive as Shadow or humans were, I think in either heyday, like, it has a little bit of that, and that's probably what it needs to be able to keep up in the environment. But my point stands. Like, I think if you want to play, like, powerful creatures backed up with, like, some strong interaction, but essentially just go wide and turn creature sideways, like, what better way to do that than with Zoo right now?
And that's what I want to do. All right, next deck, final deck of tier two, Rhinos. It's still here. But there were none in the top 16.
Oh no.
And it only had a 47% win rate at the event itself.
No.
Imagine that.
The highest ranking list that I saw was Matthew Kalkbrenner in 21st place. And it's kind of what we all thought it would be, or what some of what you all theorized about last week. It's 4 Sign of Draco, 4 Shardless Agent, 3 Solitude, 3 Subtlety, 4 Ardent Plea, 4 Leyline Binding, 4 Guild Pact, 4 Crashing Footfalls, 3 Revealed, some Fire and Ice, and 2 Force of Negation. That's the main deck.
Yeah, I'm curious how this shakes out, because we see this one here with like the Solitudes in it. I know that Devin, who's not on this week, quickly 5-0'd with a 4 Solitude list on Magic Online, playing no Fire and Ice, I believe. I think like how this deck shapes up is we have new flex spots, right? We have, and we'll talk about this later, I think, when Stan and I talk about our experiences, but I think this suite is a little hedgy, right? Like 3 Solitude, 3 Subtlety, 3 Fire Ice, 2 Force of Negation, 3 Lorien Revealed. It's like, you know, I think that those numbers will likely be fudged here and there as people still experiment with this deck.
Yeah. A couple of other notes here. One thing is it's interesting, of course, and it makes a ton of sense to see the deck move away from Hedge Maze. This one at least didn't have Hedge Maze in it. It had Meticulous Archive and Thundering Falls instead. So it had Jeskai mana in the Surveil lands.
What and about then, Lush Portico? A lot of decks have been playing that too.
Yeah, it's green white, I believe.
Green white? Okay. Yeah, that one's not in this particular list, but that makes sense to me as well. How did this deck do online? Shane, did you have any notes about
how it did? See a lot of it online. It was okay. Very mid popular. I didn't see it. I don't think it made the top 8 in any of the challenges, but I can look.
All right. So let's move on to tier 3. Tier 3 is, I promise, where a couple of things get more interesting at least, although the first one, these are decks that are 3% or more of the field. Murktide is the first one. The highest finish with this was Gabriel Nicholas in 29th place. It was a 46% win rate. Nothing super interesting about this except for some sideboard stuff going on, in particular that Murktide seems to just be, and many decks, honestly, seem to just be splashing for Pick Your Poison now, I guess because it deals with Scion pretty cleanly. And that's what they're doing. So this deck in particular has 2 Pick Your Poison in the sideboard. And other than that, there's also 1 Test of Talents, which I feel like might be a hedge against something like Creativity, and potentially also, I guess, you can also cast that against Crashing Footfalls, right? Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. Not much else going on there, so we can move on from Murktide.
I also think Test of Talents is not bad against Goryeo's Vengeance. That's all I'm going to say about that right now.
Good to note, because Goryeo's Vengeance will come up in a little bit here, at least in this tournament, it will as well. All right, one of the first breakout decks, I guess, of the weekend is the next one on the list, and that is Creativity. Now, there's some weirdness going on with Creativity, because there were actually 3 Creativity decks in the top 10. Mm. The MTG, the melee.gg data says only has like a number for 5-color Creativity, really. But when you look at it, they actually split 5-color and Jund out. And 2 of the decks in the top 10 were Jund, and 1 was 5-color Creativity. And actually, Jund was the winner of the tournament in the hands of Chaz Alexander. So Jund Creativity won this particular tournament.
And is Jund still doing like that red enchantment that can give subs of haste?
Yeah, let's talk about them in a minute. So I want to start with talking about 5-color. For what it's worth. So the 5-color deck only had a 45% win rate, according to the Melee table. The Jund list had a 68.6% win rate.
Nice.
For the 4 pilots who brought it. Those are the 4 people, of course, that we're assuming brought it and accurately named their decks. But 2 of those people were in the top 10. So the 5-color list, here's the thing. 5-color list, I think people are probably super familiar with. It's been a while since Creativity has been around much, but it's Renin 6, Teferi Time Raveler, you got your Archons, Fable, Leyline, Binding, Indomitable Creativity, 2 Prismatic Ending, 4 Lightning Bolt, 3 Reprieve, 3 Spell Pierce, 2 Change the Equation. Sounds familiar, right? To me, the most interesting thing about this is that the counter package. We're playing 3 Reprieve and 2 Change the Equation main, which is pretty wild, especially, you know, Change the Equation is kind of like main deck Titan tech, essentially, most times, and just kind of makes it hard to play green spells. And then this list also has a couple of Surveil lands, which I thought was pretty cool to see in a list other than a Cascade list. And then in the sideboard, there's a card called Turn the Earth that we haven't talked about too much that is an uncommon from Midnight Hunt. And what it is a single green for an instant that says choose up to 3 cards in graveyards. The owners of those cards shuffle them back into their libraries. You gain 2 life, and it also has flashback. It's a pretty cool way to potentially like get rid of something important in your opponent's graveyard, say like a Goryeo's Vengeance target, but also it brings your own Archons back, and it can do both for a single green. So if you have 1 Archon in your graveyard and they have 2 Vengeance targets in their graveyard, maybe you can make a move when they cast to put your Archons back and get their cards out of their graveyard as well.
This card seems perfect. This card seems mildly underplayed when you look at it, right? It's just like, hey, I can do it once, and then if they ever set up again, I have flashback on this thing. So it's really quite nice.
Yeah, it's a cool card. It's popped up in a couple of places here. It's also in the Jund list, for what it's worth, if I remember right. So let's talk about the Jund list, since this was the deck that won the tournament and also was a bit of a breakout with the just aggregate win rate with it. So like Shane said, if you're not familiar with this list, it's really, so the 5 color lists are kind of tempo control plus you, like they're kind of like planeswalker control, and you want to cast your big sorcery, right? So you want to cast your creativity. That's how you get your Archons. That's how it works. The Jund lists are that combination list where they have creativity, but they also have persist to be able to execute a reanimation plan. So they have a bit more ways to get Archon into play. And as a result of that, they have things that enable them to either mill loot or rummage through their deck to be able to set up either their a good creativity or get to creativity or get an Archon in the graveyard so they can bring it back with persist. So how do they do that? You know, you creativity them, like I said, you can transmogrify. This deck is actually running, the winning deck list is actually running a 1 of transmogrify. But we're also running, like Shane mentioned, we're running Bitter Reunion and Fable of the Mirror Breaker as ways to rummage through our deck. And Bitter Reunion is basically, what's that card? What's that? Cathartic Reunion? Is that what that card is in Dredge? Mm-hmm. So this is basically Cathartic Reunion, but on an enchantment that says when Bitter Reunion enters the battlefield, you may discard a card. If you do, draw 2 cards, and then you can pay a colorless and sacrifice Bitter Reunion. Creatures you control gain haste until the end of the turn. Now, the thing that's cool about this card, which maybe, you know, it's not the most mind-blowing thing to say, is that if you're just playing this for value because you haven't got to a persist game plan yet, the second half of this card is still pretty good if you go creativity and have 1 extra mana and have this out and you're able to either attack with 1 or 2 Archons the same turn that they come into play.
Yeah. I will say, Dave, that Cathartic Reunion, you get to discard 2, draw 3. So,
oh, that's the wrong card then. I was thinking of, yeah, different card.
But it's like, you know, the haste is, I think, really what gets this over the top for this deck, right?
Yeah. I mean, discard 1, draw 2 is also a card that's been around forever. Like there's one of those in cons. I forget what it's called. But at any rate, yes, Cathartic Reunion's better. But yeah, the haste is important here. So this is also running Surveil lands, which I thought was interesting. You know, we've seen this deck before a few times, and it's popped up during creativity times a couple of times. I just think this is a pretty interesting version of it, and it's interesting to see this kind of rise to the top of this particular metagame. Thoughts about creativity?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you all had any idea, like, what gives creativity an opening here? And this is where I feel like I don't understand Modern sometimes, where it's just like, what was keeping this deck down? Like, I don't think, like Rhinos can set up faster than this deck can, and maybe because Archon makes you only sacrifice 1 creature.
Is it a little bit of Living End? I mean, here's the thing. If you have Archons in your graveyard, nobody wants to cast Living End against you.
Yeah,
of course.
Exactly.
But if you can Living End before they get a chance to set up creativity.
Yeah, I don't really know. Like, I just think, like, and I'm not sure I want to play this into like a zoo meta, but maybe the lightning bolts, fatal pushes, bitter triumph is enough removal with like seven pieces of interaction. And you can always up it from your sideboard or up it in the main deck if the meta is calling for it, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think that this kind of deck is not bad against aggro. Just a guess, because you do have a little bit of interaction. You have six removal spells like you were talking about, but what you have is your main threat that gains life for you. Mm-hmm. And so it stabilizes, blocks well, and is also able to gain life if you get a couple of triggers off of it. So you can recover against decks that are trying to be really aggressive against you. I think that counts for something in those matchups as well.
For sure. And because, I mean, if you persist it, it is within range of Tribal Flames, which is kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm. But if you creativity it, you're okay.
Stan, any thoughts about creativity?
I don't know. This is a tough one for me just because it's so fresh after the ban. And I always did think that like Rhinos was a low-key tough matchup for that deck, even though they have access to Teferi and counter magic, being able to like play Fire Ice and Dead Gone and like remove their dwarf tokens or whatever else at instant speed, like was how I always managed to best them. And Jund was the answer to that. Like, I always struggled with the Jund matchup instead because of the access to all the hand disruption over counter magic and the blue suite. Mm-hmm. So maybe, like, with Rhinos gone and Living End gone, like, maybe that's all it really took for creativity to make a comeback. But time will tell. Yep. It's not like it had, I don't know, like, 5-color version didn't really have the strongest win rate this weekend, so maybe... maybe this is just like another way of saying that like black red disruption mid-range plans are really good, and backing them up with like a big finisher is kind of all you need. And maybe that's sort of the one of the new pillars of modern, as we see with, to some extent, with Goryeos, even though that's not black red, black white, but we can get into the comparisons and the contractions there in a second.
Yeah. All right, next deck on the list is Scales. Hardened Scales was 3.25% of the meta.
Hanging in there.
Had a good win rate. Only second to Amulet Titan on the list of decks at the top. It had a 53.16% win rate, which I thought was pretty good, being a person who is trying to enjoy Scales these days. It's interesting that it was a top performer for the weekend, given the fact that people were likely packing extra artifact hate for Amulet. But it still seemed to be able to hang on there. Unfortunately, the top performing deck, even with all this, was in 18th place. The pilot's name was Clyde Johnson. And pretty interesting stuff with this list for me anyway. Cutting back a bit on Hangerback Walkers, there were only two Hangerback Walkers in the list. Usually, I think that the list that I have right now has four, but it might only have three. It's got the full, not full, but it's got three Welding Jars, which is something that doesn't happen that much. You know, the Ozolith, the Shattered Spire, is not in the 75 anywhere, which is a card that I like sometimes as a backup Hardened Scales, but there are a lot of people who just don't play it right now because it's not searchable with Saga, and maybe they just think it's kind of dirtily, so they just skip it. The most interesting thing to me about this list, though, honestly, is that it has Basilisk Collar in it instead of Shadow Spear.
Mm.
Which I thought was fascinating as a combination we have not seen in Modern for a minute, for sure, to go with, to go with Agatha's Soul Cauldron, but also, of course, Ballista.
Yeah. What's the synergy with Soul Cauldron there?
So with Soul Cauldron, you just turn all of your creatures into Ballistas when you have a Ballista under the cauldron. So all of your creatures gain the ability to take a counter off of them to do a damage. And if you have Basilisk Collar, you can put Basilisk Collar on any creature to be able to kill something.
It's machine gun so stuff down.
Yeah, so you can pretty much always have a machine gun if you want to, mm-hmm. basically.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like America.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Please keep that in the episode.
Yeah. I am definitely interested in trying this particular part out for what it's worth, because the couple of times that I've played Scales recently, there's definitely been moments where I'm like, well, I have Ballista down and it seems pretty good, and but it's not doing enough to clear the board for me. And also, there are a number of times when I've played this deck where I'm like, I don't really want the Ozolith right now. I need something to get me out of a jam, and going to get Shadow Spear has always felt slightly dirtily to me in this list. And so going to get something that actually helps me kind of turn the tide in the right situation seems a bit better. I guess, when I look at it. So maybe this is, maybe Clyde here is the only person who is trying this, and it's not something that, you know, the Scales Discord is into or something like that, but I would definitely try it.
Sweet.
All right. Last deck in this tier.
Yeah.
We're only going to talk about it for as long as I can take one breath. Mm-hmm. That's Burn. It was 3% of the field. Its highest placement was 82nd place. It had a 45% win rate. Here's what I have to say, since we all like Survivor. Got nothing for you. Head back to camp.
Is this the best weekend Burn has had in a while?
It's not. It's not. This is still not good. Like, still not a good performance. I guess 45% is a little higher than we see sometimes, but yeah. All right. Last tier. We're turning the corner.
Okay.
But there are some. There is one other breakout deck that we need to talk about here, and that's Goryeo's Vengeance. So in the in tier four, these are decks that were more than 2% of the meta. Those decks were Goryeo's Vengeance, Scam, Hammer, and Mill. We don't really need to talk about the last three of those too much. But Goryeo's Vengeance, this is an interesting list that's been had a resurgence lately. And the weirdest thing about it, honestly, is that there's really two decks here in the results that they did not put together properly. So half the people who played this deck called it Goryeo's Blink.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other people who played it called it Esper Reanimator. And they're basically the same deck from what I could tell. So if you combine those together, they actually were almost 5% of the meta, which would have put them in, you know, around the same size as Titan or Rhinos or something like that. So a good amount of people actually brought Goryeo's Vengeance here. Tyler Waver top aided with the deck. So here's the thing. I haven't looked too closely at this. I know Stan played this for the episode, but this deck is sort of like the combo slash emotional successor to Scam, in the sense that it's like we have Grief and Solitude plus Ephemerate, and then we have a combo finish that animates something like Atraxa, Grand Unifier, or Grizzlebrand out of the graveyard with Goryeo's Vengeance at instant speed. Because for some reason, Goryeo's Vengeance is an instant, friends. Do not forget that.
Yes. And you don't really need to do it at instant speed, but you're absolutely right that like this is kind of Scam with combo. Scam creativity, almost.
Yep. Yep. So we'll talk about this more in a little bit. It's definitely been making waves. It made some noise here. It was in the top eight, like I said. And I think that's kind of like, we'll be looking for that some more. Mill had a 12th place finish, which was interesting. Mill is playing Surveil Lands, which I thought was interesting too. So more and more decks, I'm noticing more and more decks that don't have like an obvious reason for using Surveil Lands have them, which is kind of, I think, cool to see, because I think those cards make a lot of sense to play.
What kind of obvious reason do you need? Are you saying like to put one card in the graveyard?
Well, remember when people are kind of like, well, only Cascade is going to want that because Cascade is greedy. Anyway, or Cascade's going to keep two land hands and try to use those to make their broken three land hands happen, you know. But I just felt like at the time that anybody could do that, right? So why is it getting so precious? I mean, there are decks that really want it. Like this deck, of course, has it because they're going to put a reanimation target in the graveyard if they can't, if they get super lucky.
Right.
But there's other decks that are just running it for almost more for value.
I think that's the beauty of fetch lands, dog.
Yeah.
Like, fetch lands just make it so easy to turn your one or two cheeky Surveil Lands into gas, basically.
Yep.
Mill was also another one of the popular decks on Magic Online this weekend in the challenges. It was in the top five in terms of popularity in all three challenges. It didn't perform particularly well. But, and then I guess I should have mentioned Vengeance. Goryeo's Vengeance was as well, of course, on Magic Online in the top eight of all three, won one of the challenges. But yeah, this is a sea change for Modern in a little bit. I mean, Mill wasn't bonkers at Hunter Burton, but still, like, to be like 3% of the metagame, you know, in a paper tournament is kind of wild. Everyone's busting out their Mill cards, like a bunch of Craigs down there.
Yeah. And Mill actually had a 12th place finish. Austin Query almost got to the top eight with Mill. The most interesting thing to me about this is that Jace the Perfected Mind is in these decks as a three of now, which is kind of new since the last time we saw Mill on the scene. And yeah. All right. Last two decks, Scam, Hammer. There was a Hammer list that got 22nd, which is kind of interesting, but there's nothing particularly new or interesting about this at this moment. The highest Scam list was 57th place, And the person who piloted it, I'm just going to take a second to high five this person on the internet. Alan Hubbard, 57th place. This deck is scam, but actually what's in this deck is 4 Ragavan, 4 Grief, 4 Scion of Draco, 3 Talthy Voidwalker, 3 Territorial Kavu, Leyline of the Guild Pact, Fable, Thoughtseize, Molten Collapse, 4 Not Dead After All, 3 Fatal Push, 1 Undying Evil. It is Leyline Draco, no Leyline Binding scam.
Huh.
Sure.
Welcome to it.
Yes. Get used to it, guys.
Yep. Last few things I want to mention about Heart and Burden, because I know we're going to time here. It's been about 35 minutes of us talking about this. Other decks that did well that were interesting in the Cool Decks Inc. area. The finals of this tournament. Do you guys know what the deck against Jund Creativity was in the finals in this tournament without looking at the notes? Did you know?
I think I remember someone in the Discord saying that Merfolk list got there.
It was Merfolk. That's right. Merfolk was the list up against it. For some reason, I think Sam Marquard, who piloted it, is a little bit of a stinker. It's titled as Azorius Merfolk.
Yeah, I looked. I didn't see any white cards in there.
Guys, there's no white cards in this deck.
Not even in the sideboard.
Teehee! It's just a Merfolk deck, which, you know, good on you. I'm glad you got to the finals. I mean, hey, Merfolk has been kind of hanging around lately, and so I don't think it's that surprising to see someone play it and, you know, do pretty well with it. I mean, it is the one deck that's running for Tashana's Tidebinders very well right now, I think, which is kind of interesting to see as well. So that's one deck. Bring to Light Scapeshift was also in the top 8, which was pretty cool to see. This was a person named Christopher Krall. They were in the top 8, but this is exactly what you imagine this deck to look like. It's like Dryad and One Ring and Leyline Binding and all of that kind of annoying stuff that comes along with Bring to Light. There were blue-white control lists in 9th and 14th place, which I think, for what it's worth, I know we're going to talk a little bit about the mtgdecks.net matrix. I think if you look at the win rates that were reported by that, there's a bunch of notes about Calibrated Blast. There's a bunch of notes about Vengeance. I actually think that blue-white control is one of the decks that's also primed to do well, according to that breakdown. And also, you know, it almost got here this tournament. And then Calibrated Blast in 20th. So the thing that's pretty interesting to me is like the meta is very shuffled.
Oh, yeah.
In this deck, in this tournament, right? But it's not like new stuff. It's stuff we've all knew existed, but everything's just kind of moving around.
Yeah, the meta is shuffled in just a wild way. Like, you know, people are like saying like, oh, I'm going to play Tron. I'm going to play Mill. I'm going to play, you know, continue to play Vengeance. And I don't think it's really the way people predicted. Like, Yawgmoth, I think, was still basically as popular as it would have been. Titan was actually less popular than I would have anticipated, both in paper and Magic Online. And, you know,
it was at the top of the meta still, but it was probably 4 to 6% of the meta before anyway, and it's still 4 to 6% of the meta. And Yawgmoth's kind of the same. It's like Yawgmoth was around 5 to 7% of the meta, and it's still kind of 5 to 7-ish percent.
People are just kind of like, I'm going to play other stuff. Like, if Rhinos is no longer the clear best deck, I guess I start playing Mill. I don't know. It's wild.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just all me. They just have like Tron and Rhino sitting around. They're like, well, I'm just going to play Tron now, I suppose.
Nobody's like you, Shane.
Oh, thanks, Dan.
I've looked.
A real original. Anybody else have any reactions to Modern in this first look at Modern?
What does it mean when all the decks are bad?
I guess it just means that like, there's a couple very good ones and just the other is doing fine.
But there's only like one or two quote unquote very good ones, right? And like a lot of it just sort of tops out at 53%, and then it's like we're in this range of like the majority of the decks are sub 50, you know, right around the 48 49 range. We have a couple that top out at 53, and then or the rest seem to top out at 53, and then like we have a handful, if that, that are beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's indicating that maybe the decks that people thought were going to be good are not as good as they thought, right? So at this tournament in particular, it's just the top end of the meta that has a lot of decks that are below 50%, right? But the rest of the meta obviously doesn't. So there are decks that won. And if you look at the matrix from MTG decks, you know, the decks that stand out there from the weekend are like Creativity, Vengeance, Scales, Blue-White Control, Merfolk. Like, those are all ones that actually stand out pretty well. And some of them have really small sample sizes, but there's stuff going on there with those particular decks that maybe warrant a second look. Like I said already, I think that they lump together Jund and Four Color Creativity on that particular sample of decks. And so if you split those apart, I think people would be looking even harder at the Jund lists. I also think the Blue-White Control is a little bit overlooked, at least from that data and from the results of this particular tournament. That's a place that if I had any idea that I wanted to play that, I would be looking at it right now. But so I think there's a lot of stuff going on that's like on the periphery of the meta that maybe could break through. And then we'll see how things reshuffle around one or two decks breaking through. I mean, still Titan, Zoo, and Scales, I guess, were the decks that were at the top of the meta, realistically, of the popular decks. But I don't know if that's going to be persistent or not.
Did you mention the Asmo Food and Mono White Martyr decks that were in 15th and 16th place?
I didn't. I even when I was writing this last night, I was like, this breakdown is going on forever.
Forever.
So, Stan, thank you for mentioning the Asmo Food and Mono White Martyr decks that were also in the top 16. I didn't really look at those lists closely other than the titles because I don't like either one of those lists. And so I didn't know what to say about them, but yes, they were there too. And so I think Stan, it's a great data point in the sense that it's like, there's even more weird stuff that did well in this tournament that we didn't even get to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my final take on this weekend online in paper is that, you know, last week, I think it was fair to say I was potentially a little negative, not about Modern necessarily, but just sort of about like, hey, the announcement, we didn't really know what's going to happen. If you like Modern and you're not playing Modern right now, you're probably doing it wrong. Like this is probably the best it's going to be for having some fun before maybe people figure out exactly what the best deck is. And maybe that's probably only going to matter on Magic Online, but between now and, you know, maybe a few weeks, a few months, like just go have some fun. People are having fun out there. Go have some fun as well.
Yeah. Especially a big shakeup is probably coming, right? So get in there while you can.
Yeah. They're going to ban more good cards.
Quite possibly. That's what I heard. I heard that was happening.
I was thinking more they were going to ban cards by printing better cards than the ones that are there right now.
That's a good way to ban a card. It's a soft ban. Just print something better.
A shadow ban.
Speaking of something better, what do you all think? Do you want to get out of here? Do you have more takes on Modern before we go talk about stuff we played in Modern, Stanislav?
No takes on Modern. I do like your point, Shane, that like now's the time to kind of explore and experiment. Anything can do well. Like even decks that got hit by the ban, we didn't go into much detail into the online metagame or the side events at Hunter Burton, but Living End won a Modern re-CQ at Hunter Burton. So
sweet.
So like, I guess anything is possible.
If that's true, that's kind of what we want, right?
I suppose Rhinos isn't winning anything and that's what I want, but maybe actually that's what I don't want. Maybe I don't need the spotlight.
You don't, because then stuff gets banned.
Seriously. Yeah, I think we'll talk more about like the current state of Modern when we get into some of our deck experiences, because there's definitely a discussion that needs to be broached with this Rainbow package.
Stay with us.
So I guess I teased this a little bit last week, maybe even the last couple of weeks, but I had rented Goryeo's Vengeance, and it was hard to rent at first, and then finally it was hard to get through the league. But I did it. I finished the league. I've collected some thoughts. I want to talk to you guys about...
Did you collect some tickets?
No, I did not.
It happens even to the best of us.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if I was playing Goryeo's Blink. Maybe if I was on Esper Reanimator, I would have done better. But really, it's hard to know at this point. But, you know, for those not familiar, Esper cards, yes, it's playing Goryeo's Vengeance. It's trying to get that back with, or it's trying to use Goryeo's Vengeance to get back either Gristlebrand or Atraxa. I guess the interesting twist on this version of the deck is that it's also scammy. It's playing four Grief, four Solitude, and it's scamming them with Ephemerate or Touch the Spirit Realm. It's also one of the other ways that you're able to like get a little blink action after turn one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what makes this deck somewhat powerful is that it still has like all the power of turn one Grief to just sort of scam opponents out of the game some percentage of the time. But by being fueled by Ephemerate, you actually get more Grief triggers than you would out of the Rakdos scam decks, because you Grief when you evoke, then you Grief them when the Ephemerate resolves, and then you Grief them again when Ephemerate rebounds.
The old triple Grief.
So in a way, like that probably feels worse than Rakdos ever did. And then in terms of the graveyard plan, you're simultaneously filtering your hand and then setting up your big graveyard play with things like Tainted Indulgence and Faithful Mending. These decks are also playing a card from Brothers War called Falahi Archaeologist.
Yes.
Falahi Archaeologist. One in a blue for an 0/3 Human Scout. When it enters, you mill three. You may put a non-creature, non-land card from among those cards milled this way into your hand. If you don't, put a +1/+1 counter on Falahi. So the nice thing with Falahi is like either it's a 1/4/4 that like has put a payoff
for
into
two,
the
right?
yard. Yeah. Yeah, for two. 1/4/2. So either it's putting a payoff in your yard or you're getting back a Goryeo's Vengeance. Or even an Ephemerate. That's also a really great thing to get back.
Yeah, and this is a big engine for the deck, right? Because Ephemerate, like for example in Scam, you're not dead after all, was kind of like, well, if you don't get to do the thing on turn one, not dead after all is kind of bad, right? But in this deck, if you Falahi Archaeologist plus Ephemerate is like an engine that you can use to self-mill yourself a whole bunch of times, right? You can Ephemerate, then you can Ephemerate Rebound, then you can return Ephemerate to your hand, then you can cast it again. And so you can really fill up your graveyard quite quickly with Archaeologist. That's part of the story, right?
Well, you have to mill and Ephemerate with him to get an Ephemerate back. But
right.
But yes, like okay. That's part of the story. If you are, I guess, like are all out of Griefs and you don't need to Solitude anyone and you just want to like get the graveyard payoff ASAP.
Right.
Then yeah, like chaining Archaeologists is one of the ways to do that. I did not collect ticks, as we said. I went 1/3 drop this league.
Hmm.
I mean, ultimately, I personally just like didn't really like playing this deck because it felt a little too close to the scam play style that I've always, you know, hated. And I think it complicated things for me by also adding this two card combo being Goryeo's Vengeance and Graveyard Payoff. That's also like in a way somewhat easy to disrupt, or sometimes I just wasn't lucky enough to get it.
Yeah, it's funny to me that if you remember way back, like in the early MH2 days, I was trying the like Orzhov Reanimator stuff. Like I was trying some of the Esper Reanimator stuff, and it's kind of funny to me that we got back to just Goryeo's Vengeance. We're just like, we can reanimate like our anything non-legendary can be reanimated. That's great. Like we can get our Archon of Cruelty. And then we're like, what if we just reanimated Gristlebrand or Atraxa? That seems potentially better. I mean, granted, Atraxa was not printed during the early days of MH2, but yeah, it's just like we just went back to where it really mattered, which is great legendary creatures.
Yeah, and I wonder if we maybe went back to hard mode in a sense, because I didn't think the deck was bad despite my result. I actually just thought it was like really hard to pilot. And the difficulty of piloting a strategy like this that has two very disparate angles of attack that kind of come together in the mid to late game, coupled with the fact that I don't love the Grief scam play style in general, I just I wasn't doing well enough that playing that fifth match was worth my time. So that's why I dropped after four. But it's like, I think this deck is still very respectable. And really, I think it takes practice to get good. The interesting thing, again, about my league was that I was playing the week of the ban. Is when I played
Yeah. Because you were mid-league.
Yeah, I was one match in when the ban happened. And then I had like a day of mourning, a day of grieving, a day of acceptance. A
day of griefing.
Partying. Yeah. And at first, I was... My very first reaction was, am I playing a deck from a different metagame altogether? Like, was I actually even playing this deck a week too late? Was my first, maybe, fear. Because the construction of it felt like it was designed to beat up on Rhinos and Living End. And that's basically the history of this deck. Like, it was first putting up results before the Violent Outburst ban. And I think the combination of triple griefing people while also being able to scam Solitudes to answer either double Rhinos or multiple creatures off of a Living End to be exiled out of Living End range. Like, that just felt like it was a package designed to attack the Cascade deck specifically. The addition of Thoughtseize and Prismatic Ending within the interaction suite, I think, supports that too. But then over the last couple of weeks, I think we've also seen that this could be a genuine contender in the format in the absence of Cascade strategies. So I guess I've moved past that gut reaction, and I think it's doing more than just preying on Cascade. I think it's actually doing a pretty powerful, proactive thing that until certain types of graveyard hate become much more pervasive, I can see this sort of continuing to hold its own in Modern. To me, the part that maybe I even liked the most or found the most interesting was that the scam package, in a way, felt more proactive and really less conditional than it does in Rakdos Scam. Because one of the coolest things I did in my league was set up a game state where I was repeatedly ephemerating or touching the spirit realm, my grief,
right,
at instant speed, which you can do without having to like pitch it the way Rakdos Scam did. So I would have my grief on the board and I would swing, and then I would get my opponent to a point where they were hellbent, and then I would wait until their draw step, and then I would grief them again and basically just like lock them out of the game as I tried to like find a kill condition, or in this case, I think I just killed them eventually with my grief.
That was the fear of people when grief was originally printed, right? Was something like that, ephemerate plus grief, just being like, that's it.
Exactly.
Also, I don't know how closely you guys pay attention to the MTGO Salt Twitter account, but if that's to be believed...
There are screenshots.
The deck already has its haters, and maybe that's enough evidence that it's good, and you can probably even, like, to some extent, even feel safe playing it.
One tweet I saw earlier today from 8 hours ago, friend of the show, George Jabour. Here's a collection of images expressing how I feel now that Modern's, quote, end step, cast an instant, and hold up Force of Negation deck has built-in grief scam play on top of everything else. And then it's a picture of Ben Affleck smoking a cigarette, looking sad in front of his doorway. We're all familiar with that picture. There's a couple of other meme-y images that people are familiar with, but sounds like George doesn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, poor George. And look, to make matters even more complicated, there's now these weird evolutions where you're also combining it with the rainbow package, which is probably even like another good way to avoid getting blown out by well-timed graveyard hate. Speaking of graveyard hate, you do have Prismatic Ending and you do have Leyline Binding, and these are nice ways, I think, to beat permanent-based graveyard interaction, like maybe something out of Tron, getting a Grafdigger's Cage or the like. While playing this deck, the cards I was really worried about were Endurance, and though no one cast it against me, an effect like Surgical Extraction, I think, would also be pretty strong against a deck like Goryeo's Vengeance. Those two, like, instant speed ways to just get the Goryeo's target out of the yard, probably the hardest to outplay unless you can, like, do some kind of instant speed grief shenanigans or happen to have I guess, force of negation or subtlety in hand. But maybe like the rainbow sign of Draco package solves that problem by itself. I mean, at the end of the day, for me, it's like in the absence of Living End, which maybe we're in a post-Living End world now, despite one Recuse result. Maybe it's just nice to have like a graveyard deck in the format. Dredge is statistically unplayable. Living End has been cobbled. Scam, like, not really putting up results since the Fury ban either, or at least like since a couple weeks after the Fury ban. Like, here we sort of have the best of both worlds, and maybe that's good enough to have in Modern because there are fans of both of those things, and now they can sort of come together. But I would just like caution, like, I don't think this deck is easy by any stretch. I think you have to be able to like go through the decision trees that happen when you cast the Thoughtseize, and maybe those decision trees are easier to prune when you can just like triple Thoughtseize your opponent with a grief.
Yeah, but this is my dream deck. I wish I had Gorgo's Vengeance and Atraxas and things like that. I would play this tomorrow.
Yeah, you should try it, because I think that the real skill is going to come out of like finding a way to bridge that gap from like your turn one or two, if you have a scam play, or if not, like Thoughtseize, Prismatic Ending, cantrip, and getting that into the late game of Goryeo's Vengeancing something, Griselbrand or Atraxa, either to win in the spot or just to refill your hand in order to keep the chain going and then win a turn or two later. So yeah, I encourage you, Shane, to play the deck just to kind of see it for yourself. I do think though that the Science package is really concerning, and maybe I actually want to like use that as a transition to the Rhinos chat.
Yeah, let's talk Rhinos. We both played some Rhinos.
Yeah, and it was good.
So Stan, we played similar but slightly different lists. I think it's kind of, I feel like I have not seen a lot of Solitude lists. I have seen more that are just kind of the rainbow package, you know, the ley lines, the Scion, the four subtlety, the four shard list, you know, blah, 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 blah. I think there are potentially some flex spots. Like your list had two Tishana's Tidebinder, one Teferi, no fire and ice, a full playset of force and negation, and only 21 lands. My list had 22 lands, and only had three force of negation, it had three fire and ice, and no Teferi, no Tishana's. And I think that's part of kind of the flex stuff we will see, and we'll talk a little bit more, I'm sure, about what considerations you might have for, you know, when you're going to play a Tidebinder or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, for context, like, I picked this particular list specifically because I wanted to test this notion that if we're cutting Violent Outburst, maybe we don't need to put any pressure on having access to red for fire and just, like, lean a little harder into Bant.
And you just wanted to play a Cliff Boy RD list.
Yes. You know, I love that canned meat.
Well, Cliff Boy RD is a NRG stalwart if it's the same Cliff. Okay, so... Yeah, like I think the main thing we wanted to do here is say, hey, is this deck still okay? And you and I have a good amount of experience with Rhinos. I've played, you know, I've been playing the Rainbow Rhinos that had Violent Outburst in it. And so just see how the pivot to Ardent Plea was looking.
And more than just like testing whether the deck is still okay, I think we also, in some cases, are testing the discourse, right? Because immediately after the ban, it went from like, the deck is still good, to some even saying like, oh my God, is the deck even better than before? To some tweets that I won't name the tweeter of saying like, it's still the best strategy in the format. Those tweets have since been deleted.
No.
Deleted?
Deleted.
Wow. Covering their backside.
Yeah. So I think we were testing a lot like about the deck and to some extent, maybe the format too through these leagues.
Sure. I'll talk a little bit about my experiences. You talk a little bit about yours. So like, I'm going to blow up your outline a little bit, maybe, Stan.
I feel nothing.
The thing that was most obvious was that the deck still works. The deck functions. I think functions on a foundational level, actually potentially better. And what I mean by foundational is, you know, turn three, you make Rhinos. turned and that does the same thing. The thing that I think is potentially even better, and again, this is one aspect that feels better, is I think the mana feels better. It feels a lot better to me to not have to worry about red. Like when I'm getting primarily like, you know, Selesnya lands or Azorius lands and like a single Xander's Lounge. And like, maybe if the situation calls for it, I'm pulling up a Steam Vents. Cause I was pressured all the time in like the true four color lists on what the heck am I doing? Like, what am I going to grab here? Can I afford to, you know, is the only remaining, you know, Selesnya land like going to be tapped? Like, you know what I mean? Like, do like this has a Lush Portico or a Temple Garden? You know what I mean? This has a Hallowed Fountain or a Meticulous Archive. And so because your mana is a lot cleaner, it gives you the options to be like, I need three mana now, or I can take a turn off, or it's late in the game and I'm just going to fetch up my Surveil land to try to draw something, just some action off the top, as opposed to like another fetch land or something like that. And I found that to be really advantageous. How did you feel about the mana and just kind of like, you know, doing the thing? And if in fact Violent Outburst never existed.
I agree. The mana did feel a little bit better. It felt like you could stumble into basics without like having to, you know, suffer for it.
Sure.
A little bit more frequently.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know that Devin, when he played like his first league, I think he had Blood Moon in the side. You know what I mean? He was just like, yeah, I can do Blood Moon.
A lot of the decks still do.
Yeah. I mean, like, and maybe that's like a reasonable possibility, especially into the face of some of these slightly greedier mana bases of like, you know, the reanimator strategies or the creativity strategies or something like that, where it's just like, look, I can still play Blood Moon here and you're not going to have a good time with it potentially. Mm-hmm. Where I felt like, you know, realizing that Violent Outburst was in fact a real modern card that existed, however, like losing that end of turn attack step, Rhino Creation is a big deal. And I'm not sure people are fully like admitting that yet or talking about that, or maybe it's like it's being talked about by not playing it as much, the deck, because like, you know, your opponent had to respect that like they can't just attack in to open mana necessarily, because like you're going to have a couple of rhinos come out of the tall grass, or like, you know, untap with 8 power out of those same tall grasses. Like, you lose the tempo aspect of the deck and it becomes even more mid-range, where you're just saying like this 3-mana spell is the highest value thing I can be doing, potentially, you know, like more or less, right? Like, I'm creating 2/4/4s with trample for 3-mana. I'm casting 1-mana interaction with Leyline Binding. I'm casting a 2-mana 4/4 flyer with a bunch of keywords if I have a Leyline of the Guild Pact, or just a 4/4 flyer for 2-mana if I, you know, go Xander's Lounge in a Temple Garden or something like that, right? So like the deck is so like very solidly a mid-range strategy now to me. And it's you playing Tishana's Tidebinder, I think, adds like, you know, tempo aspects back into it perhaps. But like, I think the strategy as it is now, like if you're just playing like the, you know, 4 Subtlety, 4 Shardless, 4 Scion, blah, 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 blah down the list, like you are just an interaction and creature strategy at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For better or worse.
Totally. I totally agree. Like losing Violent Outburst, it makes the deck worse. I don't think there's any two ways about it.
I think it's impossible to argue against it.
I also think that, in a sense, it also makes Subtlety and Force of Negation actually more important, because people were saying that, you know, one of the things that makes Rhinos and Violent Outburst in particular so good is that you can have Outburst plus Force of Negation. And to me, it's like, I need Force of Negation now to protect myself, because your only way of getting Rhinos down sometimes is just tapping out. And that can be scary in Modern. And having the Force or the Subtlety backup, I think, is an important way to make sure that you at least maintain, like, if not board presence, but like board domination when you do something as risky as tapping out on 3.
Yeah, exactly. You know, at least you can interact, even though you took a shot and they had an answer for it. You can do something on their turn, basically.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where Force of Negation is, there's just not a lot of counterspell decks necessarily in Modern, honestly. And some of them are uncounterable at this point. And so like, but it's the type of thing where it's like, so you weren't using Force of Negation necessarily to protect your Violent Outburst, which is something Doom said a couple, like last week, right? And like, but really it, you still are going to play Force of Negation because it protects you from what they do on their turn, like their engineered explosives, like their, you know, whatever spell that you don't want to see that is either going to kill some rhinos off or stop you from casting them in the future. It's the same useful card. And I think that has much wider application against those types of things than it ever did against the card counterspell in the first place.
Yeah, I like Force of Negation to answer my opponent's Reeve Soul.
Mm-hmm. Reeve Soul.
Reeve Soul.
That's one of Stan's weird pet cards. You remember that? The Reeve Soul days?
There's been so many weird pet cards. I just think about Nimble Obstructionist every time we talk about this.
I think about Nimble Obstructionist literally like weekly.
Like what two generic single blue card does Stan want to play that nobody else thinks he should play?
Well, now it's Tidebinder.
Now it's Tidebinder, exactly.
So one thing that I think is actually kind of bad, and this is not necessarily the deck itself, but metagame forces, is Tron is not good to face, I don't think.
No, and I don't think it's ever been.
No, it's not.
And the fact that people had a positive win rate against it was always very puzzling to me.
And now with Rhinos ostensibly going to be less popular, people are picking up Tron. And I'm just like, why now? Just to like, you know, kick me while I'm down.
Yeah.
Apparently. What were your experiences like, Stan, in playing the deck? Like any particular insightful experiences?
Well, so I free rolled my league. Still got
3-2.
It. 3-2. I beat, it was a weird league. Okay. I beat Rakdos Skelemental.
Skelementals.
Wow. Was it Grief Skelemental?
No. At least I didn't see any grief. It was like Unearth. They were unearthing their Skelementals. They played that one that's, I think it's red for a 3-1 Trample Haste that like sacrifice at the end of your turn. Like they were all in on the Skelemental effect.
I know. I think I know. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. It was a funny deck, but not funny enough for me. So I beat that. I beat Red-White Taxes. Didn't feel particularly difficult there. And I beat Jeskai Lutri, which, Dave, you watched me beat that deck. That was kind of close. We were down to a minute on my clock, and I clocked them instead.
Yes, that was wild. You were down to a minute on your clock, and you only had 2 life, and you were being attacked. You were being lethal attacked as well, and they just couldn't close the attack out before you died.
It was not lethal. I had a shard list to block. I had kept them off a turn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But still, I beat these 3 weird decks, and then I lost to Murktide, a deck that I always thought was challenging. It made me even more challenging without having access to Violent Outburst. And I lost to Rug Prowess, which, like, go wide aggro decks can be difficult, especially now that Fury's gone and like, I'm not seeing any Rhino decks play Brotherhood's End. So being able to, like, answer multiple creatures is very tricky. And you sort of, like, need to, like, stabilize by just getting 4/4s. Because it was a Prowess deck, like, they had access to, like, Spell Piercers and Fluster Storms.
Right.
And like, they were able to actually keep my 4/4s off the board. And then they broke my little heart when I got a Splinter Twin turn 2 Scion with Hexproof, and they picked my poison.
No, yep. Rude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
so you're just talking about Prowess plus Questing Druid, basically, right? And pick your poison.
I did not see Questing Druid, but perhaps.
Yeah.
So on the subject of the, you know, Splinter Twin, the Leyline mm-hmm. plus Scion.
Yeah.
How do you feel after playing more with the, you know, Leyline, just Leyline in general, and Scion? Oh, you go first, and then I'll give you my take.
It's too free for the bean, Shane.
So good.
I think it's the shoulders of Atlas are on Scion's back right now, holding up like so much of the modern format. And I think we're seeing that, like, so we're recording this on Tuesday. I think by the time this episode comes out on Thursday, we're actually even going to see even more of these rainbow decks, because you can just put it into any deck. And Rhinos being a strategy that plays a number of free pitch spells, I think in that way actually benefits from having ley lines.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have a lot of games where I'll have multiple ley lines in my opening hand. I never put more than one on the board.
No.
Yeah, it's not really a benefit, but you do have a escape hatch to getting away with having bad draws, which is one of the main things that I think we talked about Leyline at the very beginning of when that card came out. It's like, it's great with pitch cards.
Sure.
Because yeah. you get to, it's fuel.
You can pitch anything.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, so I think what staying power Rhinos has right now, certainly the rainbow package is a part of that. And I'll even include rainbow or Leyline binding in that, because you can still jump through the hoops of having Leyline binding online on turn two with Xander's Lounge and the green white.
Xander's Lounge.
Come one, come all. Purim party Sunday.
Ladies, get two drinks for the price of one Tuesdays between 6 and 8 p.m.
At Xander's
Hamantotion Saturday at sundown. sundown. So yeah, like, I've totally lost my train of thought, but yeah.
Yeah, I think...
What did you think about the rainbow package?
Yeah, it's great. The...
I mean, it's too good, right?
It's doing a lot. I'm just going to repeat myself, like, from probably past weeks. It's just like, the mana fixing is so bonkers. The mana typing is so bonkers. Like, the fact that it's not like, your lands tap for each color... It's like your lands are each land type. And so like that opens up a lot of stuff. The, you know, the combination with Scion, and you know, you said you think it makes, I think you said something like you think it makes the deck better. It's like, I think it makes the deck playable because especially right now is like, it's perhaps, you know, chicken or egg type thing, right? Is like, would this deck have become midrange dot deck? If not for this, I'm not sure, with the loss of Violent Outburst, right? But I think with moving to entirely sorcery speed, with losing kind of like slowly losing the more tempo-y aspects of the deck, like when's the last time you saw like a Brazen Borrower in this deck or something like that? You know, Dead Gone is basically a casualty of the multicolor deck now. And so we're not bouncing stuff for like our weird trample wins or something like that, right? And so I feel like the deck sort of needs that out against hate too, where it's like you are stressing the opponent's like hate card types, where it's like, okay, am I going to bring in like my Chalice of the Voids and my Engineered Explosives and my pick your poisons and stuff like that, and my like maybe Dismember, you know what I mean, to like account for the increased amount of creatures I could face down without being able to kill them with EE like the Rhinos I could. So I think like that is a advantage that makes up a little bit for like the percentage loss that we're going to get from the loss of Violent Outburst. I also think like what's cool about it is like in the face of like these reanimator strategies and in the face of our kind of cruelty decks, like if you have, I mean, it does not require this to be there, but if you have like the game plan of Scion of Draco, you can remove all of your Rhinos and play Inevitable Betrayal. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's just like...
Who are you bringing that in against?
Against Archon of Cruelty, against Gristlebrand, and okay. You know, just hoping to get there first.
But against the Gristlebrand decks, like, I actually wonder if that's kind of dangerous, because then you just end up with, like, a Falashi Archaeologist.
Well, you can search through their deck and choose, right?
Yeah, it's not a mill.
Oh,
You cast a bribery or whatever it is on somebody. So oh, you get to
search
go look.
Target opponents for a creature card. You don't even have to name it.
No, you just look through it and grab whatever looks tastiest. So
okay.
So yeah,
Atraxa, Ginger Brute. Come on down.
Yeah, get that Ginger Brute. You know, but like I think like so that's the kind of stuff that I like, where it's like, you know, I have like A plans and B plans.
Mm-hmm. I'm less convinced that the rainbow package is why the deck remains playable, to be honest, and not. like, I'm not being alarmist. I'm just trying to be a little pragmatic here. Like, I'm not sure that Leyline of the Guild Pack is going to have a long storied career in modern.
Let's not start that.
Just because we're seeing it everywhere and it's a little homogenizing. I think if that was, let's just say the card was never printed, you could, in theory, still play Scion and Leyline Binding. We've seen that in the past.
Yeah.
But I still think that there's merit to just playing a clean Bant list for Shardless and Ardenplea that's protected by things like Subtlety, Force Negation, maybe Solitude, maybe Teferi. Like, fine, play like one red source for Fire Ice if you really want to, or play like that other weird split card, like Replicate, Repudiate to like to stifle and make copies of tokens. Like, I think there's still enough good cards in that Bant space to make Rhinos proactive enough to be good, even if it's more mid-rangey. Especially because I do think that, like, whether you're tapping out on turn three, with or without Forest backup, like 8 to 10 power on three, I think is still kind of just good. Because unless you have a way to cleanly interact with Crushing Footfalls, if opponents still have to spend multiple cards to deal with your Rhinos, that's positive tempo for you.
I mean, yeah. The deck, of course, is losing a lot of its own cards by, you know, with Force of Negation or Subtlety requiring pitching, and so you hope to make up for it with your Rhinos, which then pressure their removal or their blocks in like weird ways. So it's like, you know, it's a little bit of a back and forth, right? It's like why Rhinos is legitimate is that it has the power to make up for the free spells being costly at times, right? So I think that, like, to tie a bow on it is, like, I think that, like, the Scion, like the turn two, you know, very hard to remove Scion thing is like one of the modern things about the deck that makes it like slightly better, right? Where it's just like, hey, you know, it's like the 6/7 Tarmogoyf of 5 years ago, where mm-hmm. it's just like, hey, have fun dealing with this, you know, before Fatal Push or something like that, right? Where it's just like, how are you going to deal with this? Like, good luck. And, you know, Scion is definitely, I think, much cooler than that. I like how they turn gold on Magic Online. All your Rhino tokens are gold. It's so sick. I love gold.
You're too Balatro-pilled.
I am Balatro-pilled.
I love when my gold cards Balatro become today, Shane. Gold.
I mean, Dave, or both of you.
Yeah. I haven't played Balatro in like 3 days. So, but we'll not talk about Balatro this week. Don't worry, fans of the show. Okay, that's all I got. I think people will come back to the deck more than they did this weekend. Mm-hmm. I think people are just like being like experimenting with other things, and that's cool. I wouldn't be surprised if it sort of hangs around in the format and does okay. Is still maybe like, you know, a 50-52% deck. And honestly, it was like that quite a bit for a long period of time in its lifespan. And if the metagame shakeup that we're seeing sticks around, if people are still playing Tron in like larger numbers, that's going to increase the pressure on Rhinos to not be that well played. But like in terms of like, hey, if you like Rhinos and you were concerned, I'm sure you already have played some of yourself, but like my take is, it lost a step, but it did make up for that lost step in slightly different ways in terms of, you know, the mana and potentially the, I guess that's really it. It's like, you know, hey, like the mana's better and that can actually make a big difference. I don't know. You don't have to play Fire Ice. Stan, this is going to be a hot take. I have never liked fire. I don't know if you're supposed to like fire, but I've never really liked fire. I think ice is pretty cool. Like, you know, I think it's really easy to play like a steam vents and play like, you know, your Xander's Lounge for your Grixis mana colors. But like, I've never had a situation often, unless like I'm on the play and they play a Ragavan type thing, and then I kill it with fire. Like, sure, that's great. But like, it's still like, you know, 2 mana for 1 mana. I'm just sort of buying time. Or I kill 2 1/1s with it, and that doesn't really happen very often in modern these days. So it's just like, I don't love it. So did you miss it in your deck?
While I don't know that I missed Fire Ice, I don't know if I'm missing it. The card, what I missed was having a good turn 2 play. because you don't always have scions. And I didn't feel like, you know, taking a turn semi off to fetch a surveil land, which comes in tap, was enough to kind of like bridge the gap that you create for yourself when you take Fire Ice out of the deck and not replace it with other two mana action. And I don't know that there is like better two mana action. Like, we're looking at adventure spells then. I don't think there's enough split cards to really consider. And maybe you just go back to Deadgon and not have Fire Ice. But I do agree with sort of like the initial premise that Ice is the better side of that card.
Yeah.
And the one that's more frequently used. And maybe there were a couple situations in my particular league, especially against like the Murktide opponent. The Fire Ice isn't great against Murktide, but like where you end up in a sticky situation where they have like one too many blockers, and like it would be nice to just like tap someone down. So yeah, I think further testing I will do with the deck online is maybe cutting back on the main deck to fairies and Tidebinders, playing with more Fire Ices. Or maybe exploring the adventure spells a little bit, because maybe like it's time for Brazen Bower to make a comeback, and having like that tempo maneuver is good enough too.
I mean, that never hurts to bounce a reanimated creature.
Yeah. I will reiterate something I said a few weeks ago. I would be really cautious about buying Modern cards right now. I think that we might see a sea change with Modern Horizons 3. I mean, who knows? Like, maybe they play it too safe and overcorrect, but like, who knows? But like, we can. I think the smart money is on MH3 being impactful. Thunder Junction. I don't know. Like, maybe that 4-mana Oko is going to be even better than 3-mana Oko. It makes Elks again.
Plus one. It's extra good. Yeah.
Giddy up. But more importantly, like, I think that the rainbow cards, like, if we get to the point where, okay, let's do a little gentleman's wager between the three of us. I think we're going to see a competitive tournament top eight where all eight cards have Leyline and Scion at some point between now and, like, a future state when the format changes.
Channel? I mean, is that count challenges?
Yeah. Like a challenge or like something of note that makes it on Goldfish. That's not just like some random store in Burgundy.
No, I'll take that bet. I'll take that bet.
It's going to be the next 3 weeks. No. I'll give you the over under is 3 weeks that happens.
No.
You think it can happen within three?
A challenge that has all the decks has the rainbow package in the top eight?
Yeah.
All right. Give me a month. I bet it happens one time in the next month.
No, I'll say it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm just worried we're trending in that direction. Like, everyone's putting those cards in their decks because it's...
Many people are saying.
There's just, like, there's such little downside.
All right, but before we get too deep into that...
Yeah.
Let's get out of it.
Let's get out of this, yeah.
Yeah, let's wrap up this week's show. This was a fun one. Thanks, friends, for joining us and for having this lively conversation. Modern is healed... Maybe it's just bandaged. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they come out. And if you use Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review. We also love the reviews on Spotify. We read them. Sometimes we take jabs at them on the podcast. So be funny. If you'd like to submit a question to our podcast or just reach out to us directly, you can tweet us at @thedivedown, all one word, or email thedivedown@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/thedivedown. And also check out our store at thedivedown.com/store to support us while wearing some beautiful Dive Down fashion. Head over to heavyplay.com to get some beautiful fashion for your cards. They have incredible deck and dice boxes and playmats featuring the Equip Mag system. If you use promo code thedivedown2024, you'll get 10% off your first order at heavyplay.com. You're going to like the way you heavy play. I guarantee it. Also, shout out to Mana Traders for sponsoring the Dive Down. Sign up for Mana Traders using promo code thedivedown_K4L. It's all one word, very memorable, to get 10% off your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards. As always, special thanks to the bands Nowhere and Spades Blood for letting us use their music. And until next week, get out there and support Hunter Burton's Memorial Open!